This is a recording of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, mbeinstitute.org. The topic of this recording is the first of 39 topics that Mary Baker Eddy required her household to study every single day. We will make 39 separate recordings, and this is going to be topic one of those 39. As a little background, Mary Baker Eddy is the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science. She is the author of the textbook, which is entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. She indicates that the words of that textbook were dictated to her by God. So she really names herself the scribe, as opposed to the author. Those who worked closely with her as she was doing the founding and the leadership referred to her as mother, because she was always nurturing everyone to bring their full reflection out of the one and only source, which is God. She defined God in the Chapter 14, which is recapitulation, the summary of the first 13 chapters, as incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And on page 587 in the glossary, she defines God, emphasizing a few different words, but the same seven synonymous terms, because those are really the terms that define God. All of the other words are just words that enable one to understand the seven words. And she has a list, or there is a list, composed by the founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, Helen Wright, along with her husband, William. And Helen analyzed the science and health and the usage of the seven terms, and she underlined each one of those seven synonymous terms on all of the pages. And she actually segregated them so that they are in volumes where only mind is underlined throughout the textbook, and the next volume is spirit, and then soul, principle, life, truth, and the final one is love. They're very valuable. We also have on the website an alphabetical list of the words that Mary Baker Eddy used to define God. There have been a lot of people that have tried to determine what makes the universe tick, but they are always stumped because they're all looking for some kind of a material cause. Mary Baker Eddy explains that there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter at all, because all is infinite mind. So that's why they all get stumped when they try to figure out what is the force, the intelligence, that created the universe, and what makes it continue to function on its own. Now, that can be interrupted by humanity, and it has been, continuously. We want to make sure that we look at the true record of all existence, and that's in Genesis chapter 1 up through verse 3 of chapter 2. And the word that traces back to the original is Elohim. But it totally changes when you get to verse 4 of chapter 2. And throughout the Bible, there's a mixture of different derivatives that are used for the word God. So you need to use something like the Strong's Interlinear Concordance to find out what the original word is that's being used. The one is a representation from a human standpoint. The other is divine. One is based on Adam and Eve, The other one is based on God. Chapter 1 says that you and I are spiritual images and likeness of God. And we know God is perfect because God is substance, the only substance which is spirit. Spirit has no flaws. Matter is full of flaws. Matter is opaque. Spirit is transparent. Spirit is reflective. Mind, which is divine, is God. But mind, which is claimed to be mortal, which is really an oxymoron since mind is immortal, but people refer to mind as being their brain or something that instructs their brain. That is a false representation of the real mind, which is divine. So if we are talking about something that comes from the brain, it's going to be inundated with a belief of matter being real. In fact, matter having life, truth, and intelligence. But the only real intelligence is God. Here's the second definition, which makes it very clear. And it's on page 587 again. God, the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. On that same page, the definition of good is God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. Could there ever be an accident since God is the only action? Everything about God is prefaced with the prefix of O-M-N-I, omni. It means one, only, and all. So therefore, there is no competition, there is no opposition, there can be no dilution, deflection, stoppage, or reversal of whatever God represents. The mind facility, the mind definition of God, includes such things as facility, faculty, functionality. Everything about God is based on being spirit, which is pure, which is the opposite of matter, which is really without a foundation and is totally false. It's an incorrect view of truth. It's an incorrect view of all existence. It's an incorrect view of every man, woman, and child. When Jesus saw somebody that was ill, He did not see them as someone that was ill. He did not see Tabitha or Lazarus as dead. He did not see the blind man as blind. When His disciples asked, who did sin, this man or his parents, because he had been blind from birth, Jesus said, neither. But the only reason that this crossed our path is to bring forth the glory of God. And He did that by healing the blind man. Before He even did anything about the healing, He asked the blind man, do you have faith that you can be healed? And he said, yea, Lord. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, it says, God said, let us make man after our image and after our likeness. And then in verse 27, it says, so God made man in His image and after His likeness. God didn't do anything except to reveal what was already true. Mary Baker Eddy translates the first three words where it says in the beginning to in the only. and the only existence there is outlined in the seven steps that are in Genesis chapter 1 up through verse 3 of chapter 2. Now, what do you think would be the very first thing that Mary Baker Eddy would bring to the attention of her household staff to study every morning before they started their regular activities? Here it is. It's from Science and Health, and it's page 22, which is the chapter on atonement. It says, "Wait for your reward. Work out your own salvation is a demand of life and love. For to this end God worketh with you. Occupy till I come. Wait for your reward, and be not weary in well doing. If your endeavors are beset by fearful odds, and you receive no present reward, go not back to error, nor become a sluggard in the race. When the smoke of battle clears away, you will discern the good you have done, and receive according to your deserving. Love is not hasty to deliver us from temptation, for love means that we shall be tried and purified." That's what we need to get out of every single part of our day. We want to love. On the home page of the website, mbeinstitute.org, we have a section that is entitled Effective Healing. And in it, we give you the steps that are needed to get the most out of your progress every time that you sit down in quiet with full concentration to be able to focus on improving the life of everyone in your realm. One should begin with a single individual that they see that is in need. The text of this number one topic that is being covered is an all-important clue. There's three introductory quotes at the beginning of the textbook. The first one states, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." The second one, "There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." And the third one, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. Thou here and everywhere." Every word that is included in these topics has a purpose. Mary Baker Eddy said sometimes she would wait for several months for the right word to come to her to express a thought. Those three quotes being at the very beginning of the textbook, it appears to have a guiding directive. We're beginning at the beginning of probably the most scientific book that's ever been written, even more so than the Bible, certainly alongside it. But the Bible leaves many, many questions and a great mixture throughout of both the good and the evil when referring to acts of God. But there's no such dilution, deflection, if one is really talking about being in atonement with the Christ consciousness, which is the God consciousness. So the first quote that says, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free," or the words of Jesus as related in the book of John. The second one is from Shakespeare, telling us whatever we look at is a reflection of what we're thinking. And what we're thinking is a projection onto whatever we're looking at. If you've ever been in a crowd and decided to smile at every single person as you walk along and go out of your way to make eye contact with the individual, see what happens. I've done it, and I found that the facial expression that you show to others has a direct impact on the individual that you make eye contact with. You can turn a very disappointing, downtrodden looking individual to someone that has received a glint of joy, and it may be just the uplift that they needed to get on the other side of a problem, to see through it, instead of being in a great state of puzzlement. The Institute recommends that whenever you prepare to read anything or study anything out of the textbook, that you recite those three short thoughts, the quotations, to yourself, to remind yourself that this is what you're looking for. The highest level of truth that you can understand. And we also recommend that you record everything you read. These instructions are on the homepage of the website under the title Effective Healing. We're given 5 senses: seeing, hearing, feeling, smell, and taste. Are we going to use all 5 to do probably the most important thing in our life? And that is to work toward transforming ourselves to a higher level of understanding than where we are at this moment. And Isaiah tells us, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little, reminding us, don't try to take one giant leap, because you need to have a solid foundation. One step at a time. That's all it takes. But will we take that one step? Will we look upon it as something significant, to let it guide our entire framework of atmosphere and focus, no matter what we're doing? We need to be thinking, talking, and acting in a way that's in an alignment with the laws of God. Think about what is probably considered among the most important things in the Bible. We could start with Genesis chapter 1, a record of all existence, a spiritual record. And it ends on verse 3 of chapter 2, before it starts talking about Adam and Eve. Because there it starts talking about a mist that went up. So think of Genesis chapter 1 as the very first thing to instill in our thought one of the most important messages. It's the foundation of the whole Bible. And then think about the Ten Commandments. That tells us how to conduct our life. And Jesus even condensed that down to one commandment. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. So he's really looking at all Ten Commandments as one commandment that is joined together. He says, and the second is like unto it. The one is visible. We're loving something that is visible, our brethren, something we can see, something we can share doing good things with, something we can appreciate what someone else is doing. So that's two things. Genesis and the Ten Commandments. Think about the Sermon on the Mount, otherwise called the Beatitudes, the Lord's Prayer. And think about the definition of God. Five things. We have a matrix on the website, mbeinstitute.org. It's under the title of Compare, showing how those five items line up perfectly into the 7 days of creation, Genesis chapter 1, with the seven terms for God and all of the other things that were mentioned. Everything that exists is connected. Nothing is isolated. There is a grand plan that as we transform our thought to a notch higher, it's like being in a flying vehicle. It could be a balloon, an airplane, even a glider that's being pulled by an airplane. And as we go higher and higher, we have a better view than we did at a lower elevation. As we permit our thought to receive that better view, we can think one way about it, that we're rising above the belief of matter. And we can look at it as something below us and think about as we rise up, we're rising into a pure, a more pure, and a more pure realm where we get a view of a little bit larger picture than we saw a second or a few seconds before. Jesus was always in heaven, the heaven view, looking not at what is presenting itself visibly, but knowing what the source was behind it. And if you think about those seven terms for God and relate it to those other four very important messages in the Bible, and with the Lord's Prayer, it's highly recommended that you utilize the spiritual interpretation of it along with the original text, which has been provided to us by Mary Baker Eddy on pages 16 and 17 of the Christian Science textbook, then you will get a perspective that will aid you in cultivating the view that Jesus saw continuously. Mary Baker Eddy hourly set aside what she was doing for a few moments to make sure that everything she was thinking, saying, and doing was in alignment with the God consciousness view, the Christ consciousness, the pure view of whatever it was that was occupying her thought. She was attacked just like Jesus and some of the other great thinkers in biblical history. She was attacked continuously. They're not so much being attacked as an individual, but as a symbol of what they represent with the pure thought, speech, and action that they're pursuing that covers all humanity with the true nature that is explained in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27 in particular, where it says, "And God made man in his image and after his likeness." Now, the first 25 verses already told us about five specific functions of what is in all existence. And they're divided into what is termed the days of the week. The very first thing was light. Not from the moon or the sun, but from mind. It was the enlightenment from mind. It doesn't matter what the weather is, whether we are in the light or the dark from a visible standpoint. It doesn't matter where we are or what other circumstances seem to be having an influence on our thought. The light of divine mind is omnipresent. And the same thing with day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5. Because Genesis chapter 1 is not so much a record of what one might call a creation as it is of a revelation about what has always been true. The Bible tells us there is nothing new under the sun. Now, we can't believe the first three words of Genesis chapter 1 where it says, "In the beginning," and also agree that there is nothing new under the sun. And we must remember that the words that we read in the Bible are not all coming from God. Large portions of the Bible were passed down verbally for long periods of time. And if you've ever played that game where a number of people will stand in a straight line, or it could even be a circle, and someone writes out something on a piece of paper and hands it to wherever they're going to begin with the people that are standing together, and asks them to read it to themselves, not verbally, but to themselves, and then give the piece of paper back to the one that is hosting this game. And the first person that read the paper is supposed to then, from memory, say what it said. And, it, you know, they typically just have one sentence on it. And pass that information as accurately as they can remember it on to the one standing next to them. And then that person passes it on to the next one. Around the circle, or down the straight line, whatever it is. But they whisper it in their ear, so that no one else can hear it. And then after they've gone around the complete circle, or at the end of the line, the very last person to hear it is requested to write down on a piece of paper what they heard from the person that passed the message to them, and give the piece of paper to the host. And then the host reads the first piece of paper that was the message, and then reads the last piece of paper that is how it ended up after it went through however many people were playing the game. And you will find that they are foreign to each other. The message that was given to the first one is totally different than the one that the last one heard from the one standing next to them. Now imagine if even one chapter out of one book of the Bible was passed along through verbal communication with no facility to be able to record it, how much different it could be after they passed it along through a series of generations. Well, that's what really happened. That's why it's so important when they do their excavating and they find something new that was written in the original text. There have been many things discovered after Mary Baker Eddy was no longer visible, when she went around the corner in 1910. So it's very important that we remember that when we read something out of the Bible. And a tool such as the Strong's Interlinear Concordance is extremely valuable, because that is a concordance that shows the original Hebrew or Aramaic, whatever the original language was written in for that particular sentence, because it gives us the English translation and it tells us the grammar of it. Is it past tense, present, future tense? Is it male or female? It gives you the whole perspective of the language. So then you can think about it in a much more accurate way than otherwise. In Genesis chapter 1 up through verse 3 of chapter 2 has the word Elohim, but starting with verse 4, whenever it talks about God, it's a totally different word. That's why the story of Adam and Eve is like the opposite of Genesis chapter 1. And Genesis chapter 1 was written after Genesis chapter 2, according to the calendar. But the hand of God played in the positioning of those books of the Bible, even though there was some human influence that had some mistakes in it, a lot of mistakes, leaving out some very important books of the Bible, leaving out healings, leaving out very important quotations. For example, in a London museum, there's a conversation between John and Jesus that is totally left out of the Bible. And it's John asking Jesus two very important questions. And remember, John was the one that experienced being put in a pot of boiling oil in an attempt to kill him in the most painful way. And he survived it. So they decided there wasn't anything to do with him but exile him. So they exiled him to the island of Patmos. And that was very important for biblical history. Because after Jesus ascended, he came back in the flesh and met with John, and they worked on the book of Revelation together. John was the medium to be able to deliver it to humanity, because humanity was not of a mental capacity to understand Jesus. And he said before he ascended that he had many more things to say, but they weren't ready. They were not ready. So he didn't say. Just like when the king at the trial asked him, "What is truth?" Jesus was silent. Because no matter what he said, the king wouldn't have understood. So he just kept quiet. And Jesus is known for his famous words of saying, when you're talking to someone, keep it very simple. Just say, yea, yea, or nay, nay. How much time do we waste arguing with someone that is thinking on a totally different level than we are? And we've been on both sides of the desk. We could have been the one at a much lower level of thought than who we're talking to. It happens all the time. That's why abiding by the golden rule is not the easiest thing in the world to do. And why it's very easy to be in an argument with someone. Either they know a lot more about it than we do, or less. But there's so often a mismatch and not being on the same level of understanding, and henceforth, the disagreement comes about. Dale Carnegie was a great trainer of people on how to be successful. He was a very humble person. He had a very high opinion of Mary Baker Eddy. He was around in her era. And he said, be careful about stating anything with a strong opinion or disagreeing with someone else that has a strong opinion, because we may later be enlightened and change our mind completely, and instead of disagreeing, we may have a strong agreement with what was said. Einstein gave us some very important words about this. And he said, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. Never. Remember that first quote, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Are we continuous in our questioning, in our seeking the truth? Are we letting the truth be our pathway to what we're learning about the topic of interest, whatever it is? Or are we trying to justify a bias and to engineer it in reverse? So we start with what our bias is and then try to gather information that supports it. We provided a prayer treatment in the last few days on truth, reverse engineering. But it was the opposite of trying to support a bias. It was looking at the goal and then going back and determining a plan that we think would get us to accomplishing the goal. Always keeping our thought on desiring to be following, searching for, and following the truth. And being willing to change our plan, refine it, if you will, as we go along that path of discovering what the truth really is. The definition of God says that God is the great I Am, all-knowing. all seeing and acting and wise and so forth. If God is all knowing, are we going to depend on a human viewpoint of what the truth is about anything? Any kind of a decision that we are involved in, are we willing to follow where the truth leads us? Are we willing to yield our self-will so that we are preparing our thought to listen? One of the most important steps in the presentation on the home page about effective healing is to record, as mentioned, everything we read. Because that means that you're using a sense that you normally wouldn't use when you're studying something. The common thing to do when we're studying something is that we're trying to learn what is being said. If you take any really high-level advanced courses from the top people in the industry on that particular topic, you're going to find that they will be repeating themselves purposely, giving you the same information from a little bit different angle. It's like walking around a statue in a museum to get a view of it from every angle. And that's what we need to do with the truth. It's the same statue. The truth doesn't change, but we're getting a little bit different view of it by looking at it from every angle, all around the whole 360 degrees of circling the object. That's the way we need to do with everyone we have any kind of a dealing with. With any project that we think is worthwhile that we're going to be working on or are working on. Vladimir Ashkenazi, arguably one of the finest, if not the finest pianist of all time, was asked in a Q&A at one of his performances by apparently a well-known critic that could tell the difference between whether someone was playing a classical piece of music with total perfection or whether he was a little bit off. He said, "I've been following you around for several concerts, and I can't find any time you've ever made a mistake." In my view of being a professional critic, he says, "How can you perform with such absolute perfection all the time? It's like you never have a bad day." And Vladimir said, and he was Russian, so he had an accent. I'll try to pass it on. He says, "I practice, practice, practice until the music plays me." Contemplate. Is that the way we do when we are studying something, trying to elevate our level of understanding? Our presentation on effective healing makes a serious attempt to give you the tools and the procedure that works. And if you read the last 101 pages of the textbook, which is the chapter on fruitage, and it's at the end of the textbook on purpose, letting you know that you're not going to be able to experience what they experience in those testimonies until you have gone through the trials and tribulations that they have, the learning process that they went through, the dedication that they went through in trying to tear apart everything they were trying to read to look at the smallest element and building up a foundation so they could get the big picture. So you can't get to the end unless you go through the steps. You can visualize the end. We can close our eyes, in fact, not even need to close our eyes. But we can get our attention off of what is all around us and transport ourselves to some distant place. Maybe somebody, someplace where we vacationed and it was very pleasant. And we can think back on it in the middle of a very difficult problem that we're working on, and put ourselves momentarily in that peace and joy that seem to be like heaven. All we have to do is think about what Mary Baker Eddy said, that infinite progression is concrete being. And any time we get discouraged, think about the goal. In fact, we have three movies that we recommend. They're on the home page in that same section about how to heal or effective healing. And one of them has that as a title, Remember the Goal. Another one is Pay It Forward. And another one is Stand and Deliver. Stand and Deliver has some colorful language. It's very mild compared to what people talk in normal conversation today. I mean, we're at a level below Sodom and Gomorrah in the fabric of what daily thought, speech, and action seems to be. But I always like to caution people, because we seek seriously for those things that we can pass on as inspiration in practical daily experience that does not include any degree of low morals. But those three movies are very worthwhile. And as mentioned, they're on the home page, so you don't have to write it down. Just go to our website, mbeinstitute.org. Mary Baker Eddy says we are bombarded constantly with suggestions that are not the perfect godlike thought, speech, or action. They may be off a little bit. They may be the totally opposite. And of course, if we have something the opposite, all we have to do is flip it. Think of the reverse as being true. And let that be our guide. Let that be the atmosphere that we reflect. Because we need to be a lighthouse. At whatever level we are, we need to let the best of our thought, speech, and action be what we are doing. Just like Vladimir Ashkenazi, he had to get himself out of the way and let the music come through his arms and hands and legs, his whole being. The entire expression, the entire atmosphere he was creating for his audience was heaven on earth, perfection being demonstrated in real time. This first topic of 39 topics is only, I don't know, 8 or 9 lines. And I've been speaking here for an hour, almost. I guess it's 55 minutes. But we need to see how what we're reading lines up with what our thinking is. Are we thinking along the right lines? Because what is in the textbook is battle-tested. And Mary Baker Eddy discovered Christian Science when she had a healing of her own self after having what was given a prognosis of fatal fall on the ice in the winter in the Northeast, where it was cold and icy. She was not expected to live at all. I think there were like three different physicians that had the same prognosis. Somebody asked her one time if she felt strong and healthy. And she said, from a human standpoint, I'm a frail woman, but I don't depend on physicality for my life. She left four words on her bedside the day that she went around the corner. And there have been hundreds of pages that have been written about it. God is my life. That was her departing thought. This first topic is from the chapter 2 of Science and Health, which is entitled Atonement and Eucharist. And that has been defined from a spiritual viewpoint as meaning the atonement is aligning ourselves with the life of Christ Jesus as our way shower, and Eucharist is the price we pay for it. Because whenever we make advancement, there's a price for it. And in this case, the price is we have to give up the old false beliefs that tries to saddle us with being of the heritage, the lineage of Adam and Eve, where humanity has been taught to believe that we are all born as a sinner, and we just have to accept it. I read quotations from a particular thing out of the Bible that has meant something to someone that wrote an article on it, or included that in an article. And these are non-Christian scientists on the internet in my research. And it says, I know I'm born a sinner and I'm not perfect, but this quotation stood out to me today when I was reading the Bible. Imagine, they are accepting right off the bat that they're not perfect, that they're born a sinner. And yet they're trying to be thinking about the opposite. Try doing it the other way around. Try starting off with a statement that God is the source of all existence, including me. This is you talking to yourself. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving and eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance and intelligence. Good is God, Spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. Therefore, I can never be involved in an accident because the only action that exists is the action of God because of the word omni, O-M-N-I, meaning one, only, and all. And think about the scientific statement of being. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God. And man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. Put yourself in there and say, therefore, I am not material. I am spiritual. On page 591, Mary Baker Eddy gives us the definition of man. She says, man is the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. I mentioned that there was a conversation between Jesus and John that has not been recorded in the Bible. It was one of those things that was left out. And it's in a museum in London under 24-hour guard. I haven't been there, so I don't recall offhand when I read it whether it was on some kind of a stone tablet or what it was. But it's there, and the conversation is on our website. And I will relate to you the questions, and then you'll have to look on our website to get the answers and the explanation. Christian Science is based on this conversation. And Mary Baker Eddy probably had never seen this. I believe it was uncovered in excavation long after she went around the corner. But the questions are this. And this was John asking this directly to Jesus, probably on the island of Patmos. Because he's the only one that was inspired enough to even know what the question is, or what the question should be. Einstein said if you were given 1 hour to solve a problem, and if you had the right solution within the hour, that it would save a huge number of human life, a huge amount of human life, a huge number of lives, how would you divide up the time? He said, I would spend 55 minutes figuring out the right question to ask. In other words, doing his research. And then he said, I probably could solve it in 5 minutes. Does that speak how important it is to prepare before we do something? He was going to put 55 out of 60 minutes in preparation, thinking about what is the meat of the problem. What's the real question that needs to be answered? Well, that's what John figured out to do in asking Jesus. And these are the two questions. Is there a material body? Number two, is there a material universe? With that, I will recite to you a very special prayer from Mary Baker Eddy that she gave to her final class in the Metaphysical College in 1898. She gave them 7 prayers. She never recited it to anyone else except that class. And that class being her final class, she hand-selected every student who would be able to attend that class. And after the class was concluded successfully, they would be awarded the CSD degree, Doctorate of Christian Science. On the third day of that class, she assigned them at the end of the day to go out and perform a healing and report on it the next morning when they came back to the next day's class. Imagine, after only 3 days. Of course, remember, she knew her students very well, and it had already been, 34 years since she discovered Christian Science, or 32 years, I guess, from 1866 to 1898, depending on what month. So she selected them, and they were all CSD at the end of the course. And every one of them came back with a healing that they had performed in that time they were away from class, 12 hours or whatever. So she gave him 7 prayers, one that focused on each of the 7 synonymous terms for God. And since the topic of this first topic, or since the title to this first topic, is Atonement and Eucharist, Wait for Reward, and I'll read it one more time. Work out your own salvation is the demand of life and love. And those are capitalized, meaning God. For to this end God worketh with you. Occupy till I come. Wait for your reward. And be not weary in well-doing. If your endeavors are beset by fearful odds, and you receive no present reward, go not back to error, nor become a sluggard in the race. When the smoke of battle clears away, you will discern the good you have done and receive according to your own deserving. Love is not hasty to deliver us from temptation. For love means that we shall be tried and purified. Here is the prayer from Mary Baker Eddy, which will focus on spirit, because this is atoning with the thought of Christ Jesus. And at the end of this recitation of this short prayer, I will say amen, and sometimes a thought occurs while I'm reciting it, and if that happens, then I will add that after the words amen, and I will identify this prayer treatment with the date and the time for future reference, and then I'll say the end. And when I say the end, that means no more talking from this guy that is taking way more time than probably what you imagined. And remember, this is an extemporaneous prayer treatment. I read the text, but everything else is as it occurred. No prepared text. None of these are ever prepared. We leave our thought open so that whatever we're open to receiving, it flows without human intervention. That's the goal, and I hope that's the case. Here is the prayer, which is entitled Diapason of Heaven by Mary Baker Eddy, with a focus on spirit. We must declare often that spirit is not an invisible personality inhabiting a material body. Spirit has no other meaning than God and substance. We must declare there is only one spirit, and that is God. Spirit is my God, and my God is spirit. Individual, incorporeal, immaterial. Spirit is enthroned in my consciousness. Matter and personal sense are not enthroned. We must declare these statements for ourselves in our work. Amen. there are two thoughts I wanted to convey that just came to the surface. And one is that if you ever have any questions about Christian Science, the system of divine metaphysics, which of course is the system of Christian Science, any questions about the Bible, any questions about this prayer treatment, or anything related, please use our contact form so that we can have contact. The other thought is that the title to this is Wait for Reward, and it should be obvious to you by now that there is nothing passive about being on a path of progress. We don't want to go 3 steps forward and 1 back, or maybe 1 step forward and 3 back. We want to make continuous progress, and the Isaiah quote about taking 1 step at a time is exactly in line with this title, Wait for Reward. And we're not being passive, but we're being patient and perseverant in our pursuit of truth. If we are not one now, we want to cultivate, nurture being a genius. And what do I mean by that? It's not something we're born with. There are geniuses that can be found that do not accomplish anything. They may invent something and then don't do anything with the invention. In fact, Thomas Edison is probably known not for what he invented, but for finishing what other people invented and didn't bring it to fulfillment and take it to market so that their customers could benefit from it. A genius is merely someone that has their heart in the right place, thinks of an idea that would benefit everybody concerned. They formulate a plan, a blueprint. It has to be flexible, of course, so that as the plan is worked on, new ideas or refinements are incorporated into it. They monitor the progress, and they stick to the goal, never giving up, never giving in. If they get knocked down, they get right back up and figure out what did they do wrong and how can it be corrected. Make the correction and then charge forward. Again, not like the rabbit who raced with the turtle and took off like a rocket, immediately got tired and laid down and went to sleep. And the turtle walked right on by through the finish line before the rabbit woke up. We want to be like the turtle. Steady progress, a step at a time, and not letting anything discourage us where we stop and forget about the project. If you think about really worthwhile things and people that worked on something that was important, you will find a very small decimal. And I say decimal because that's like 1/100 of 1%. You will find a very small decimal of the people that actually followed through to conclusion. And that's what is meant when a genius is referred to. They bring it to fulfillment. We want to all cultivate being a genius. And if we are one, to a higher level. Because God is infinite, and the path of infinite progression to concrete being is an infinite number of improvements, continuously, forever. So those are the two thoughts. To repeat the title, it is The 39 Household Topics. This is number one. It was entitled Wait for Reward. And that is quoted from page 22 from Science and Health. Today is Tuesday, March 24, 2026. And it's at 14:04 on the 24-hour clock. Thank you for listening. The end.